Genesis chapter 39. Last night we talked about Joseph being sold into slavery, taken down to Egypt, sold to a man named Potiphar. Potiphar was captain of the guard. Potiphar figures out really quickly that God blesses Joseph and puts him in charge of everything. We ended in verse number 5. If you look at verse number 6, we're not going to read it, but you'll find that he trusted Joseph so much that he didn't know anything about the affairs of his house except for what he ate himself. He trusted Joseph implicitly. But there was something rotten in Denmark, if I can use that expression. Look at verses 7 through 12 with me. And it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast her eyes upon Joseph, and she said, "Lie with me." This was an immoral lady. The Bible doesn't tell us, but I am guessing that Joseph wasn't the first person that she lusted for. Because typically, when someone is this overt, there's been some thoughts going on in the heart, in the mind before. But anyway, she's very overt. She says, "Lie with me." That's what she wants. Verse number 8. But he refused and said unto his master's wife, "Behold, my master wotteth not what is with me in the house. He hath committed all that he hath to my hand. There is none greater in this house than I. Neither hath he kept back anything from me but thee, because thou art his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" Joseph does several things here. He resists the temptation. He realizes it would be a sin or a breach of trust to his employer, to the slaveholder. But at the end of the verse, he makes it very clear that it also would be a sin against God. Your pastor touched on that in the first half of this evening. Sometimes it's easy to say, "Well, I hurt someone's feelings," or maybe they took it the wrong way. Have you ever heard someone, "Oh, I did this, but they took it the wrong way"? Well, how were they supposed to take it? All right, in a situation like this, it's not only where he would have a breach of trust with Potiphar, but it would be a sin against God. The New Testament talks about immorality being a sin against your own soul and a sin against your own flesh as well. But he resists this temptation. Here's one of the most admirable things about Joseph. When he's giving a power, an ability, and control, he doesn't let it go to his head. He doesn't let his ego get in the way of his clear thinking. Now think about it for a minute. He's 17 years old. He's sold into slavery by his brothers. He's taken down into Egypt. He is sold to Potiphar, captain of the guard of Pharaoh. This man knows security. He would be cynical by nature. And yet he sees God has blessed this young man. I'm going to put him in charge of everything in the house. He's going to be in charge of everything to the point I don't even understand my business affairs. He's in charge. And now the wife of Potiphar says, "I like you more than I do my own husband." All right, we're adults. We can figure that out. Joseph doesn't let it get to his head. Today, after I had done some studying and some work here in the office, I left here and went to a barber shop in this area. And I wanted to get a haircut to look neater and change my beard because Buzz needed a makeover for tonight. And I walk into the barber shop, and I won't say which one specifically, but the woman, who was going to cut my hair, just starts chatting and shooting the breeze, if I can use that expression. And I actually texted my wife. I said, "There must be a law that the hairdressers in here can't have normal hair." She had the most beautiful head of purple hair I've seen all day. But she starts talking, and she has no way of knowing I'm a preacher, so her conversation is spicy. And she says, what are you doing here? And I said, "Well, I'm a preacher. I'm here speaking in a vacation Bible school at First Baptist Church." "Oh." I love it, because all of a sudden it's like, well, if I treat him differently, maybe God will think highly of me. I don't know. It's a great feeling. It's kind of fun. But here's what she said. "Oh, You must be big time and pretty important, huh? My son knows better. I don't look as old enough to be his dad tonight, do I? That might be on purpose. The first thought that crosses your mind was, yeah, I'm from Pennsylvania and I get to go travel and I get to speak in lots of different places, but that's exactly the wrong thought to have. And I said, no, not even close. And she kind of laughed nervously because she was trying to flatter me. You know, tips are involved. I said, no, not at all. It's just I'm blessed to be able to come here and I very, very much enjoy it. And that kind of put a kibosh on that conversation. But the first temptation was when someone flatters you is, yeah, I'm pretty significant. Joseph could have thought, yeah, Potiphar, he doesn't even take care of his own things. I am in control of the house. But he doesn't do that at all, does he? It gets even more impressive. Keep looking on with me. Verse number 10, and it came to pass as she spoke to Joseph day by day that he hearkened not unto her to lie by her or to be with her. She didn't stop. That's one of the reasons I think that this wasn't her first time, as far as not being moral in her heart. All right, she was persistent day by day, and yet Joseph had the discernment and discretion not to fall into temptation. That's impressive. Verse number 11, and it came to pass about this time that Joseph went into the house to do his business, and there was none of the men of the house there within. For some reason, none of the men servants are in the house. Now, we understand that Joseph had discernment. Joseph would understand the awkwardness of being in the same place by himself with Potiphar's wife. After all, this has been happening day by day. I suspect she arranged for the men servants to be gone. I suspect she sent them away to remove all interference, because you'll find that they come back in. Well, what happens? Verse number 12. And she caught him by his garment, saying, lie with me. And he left his garment in her hand and fled and got him out. Men, ladies, sometimes when temptation comes, the best thing to do is get you out. All right? Last week we were in a meeting in Georgia, and I heard a preacher say that Joseph took off his robe and left it there. No. Look at the verse. She caught him by his garment. Now, this would have been his outer garment, and he left it behind. Instead of taking the time to take it or rip it away from her, he just got him out. Sometimes in the face of temptation, we need to get out. Now, our vice president was heavily criticized by the mainstream media not long ago for saying that he would not be alone with a member of the opposite sex. And people criticized him. But what that tells me is he has discernment. He has discernment and understands the need to avoid the appearance of evil. I know a pastor in Alabama, and I don't know why I'm stuck on this point, but maybe God does. I know a pastor in Alabama who, when he took over a church, discovered that there were times that different people would come and work on maintenance at the church. And he discovered that a woman was showing up and doing some things, and a man would show up, and they'd be working in different parts of the church, but they were there alone. And he said, you've got to stop that. You've got to figure out how to arrange it so she's there either by herself or with another lady, or he's there by himself or with another man. We can't have this because of the appearance of evil. Not saying anything inappropriate was going on, but we need to avoid the appearance of evil. Joseph avoided the appearance of evil. Well, we're not going to take the time to look at the verses, but Potiphar's wife was feeling scorned. She was feeling spurned, and so she lied. Potiphar should have known better. He had the discernment to understand that God blessed Joseph. And so he had the discernment to turn everything that he had over to Joseph, didn't he? But when Mrs. Potiphar comes and lies to him, he believed her. Well, what happens? Look at verse number 40, or excuse me, chapter 40. It ends up that you find that he's locked up. He's put into prison. The keeper of the prison finds out that God blesses Joseph. Now, that's not hard for me to understand. Potiphar was what? Pharaoh's captain of the guard. Who was the keeper of the jail? The keeper of Pharaoh's prisoners. They would have had business connections. The keeper of the prison would have heard, would have understood, this Hebrew prisoner is now my friend Potiphar's slave, and he's in charge of everything, does remarkably well, but for some reason Potiphar has him put in prison. The keeper of the prison finds out that God's blessing Joseph, and sure enough, guess what? He puts him in charge of everything of the jail. I don't know what the keeper of the prison's doing at this point because he's turned everything over to Joseph. But I guess that's your prerogative when you're in that position. Genesis chapter 40, we'll look at verses 5 through 8. To give you a backdrop, Pharaoh has become very angry with two of his top men. One's a butler and one's a baker. Verses 5 through 8. The Bible says, "And they dreamed a dream, both of them, each man his dream in one night, each man according to the interpretation of his dreams, the butler and the baker of the king of Egypt, which were bound in prison. And Joseph came in unto them in the morning and looked upon them, and behold, they were sad." They had a dream. They did not understand what it meant. Dreams were often used in the Old Testament as a sign of things that were to come. And so they placed a lot of emphasis on dreams. We shouldn't put a whole lot of emphasis on dreams. It may have been influenced by what you ate the night before. May have been influenced by what you were thinking about or heard the night before. I made a joke that Brother Guthrie's Jonah song was going to be ringing in my head all night long. Fortunately, I was able to get out of my head. Please don't sing it to me before I leave here tonight. But these two men had a dream. Each of them had their own dream. And when Joseph came in to look at them, they were very sad. And he asked Pharaoh's officers, verse number 7, that were with him in the ward of his Lord's house, saying, "Wherefore look ye so sadly today?" And they said unto him, "We have dreamed a dream, and there is no interpreter of it." And Joseph said unto them, "Do not interpretations belong to God? Tell me them, I pray you." Again, Joseph is passing the credit on to God. He doesn't let this opportunity go to his head. Remember what we've seen the first two nights? Joseph had his own dreams. And when he delivered them to his brothers and then to his brothers and his dad, it didn't go remarkably well for him, did it? But here he is faced with two people who have dreams. And instead of saying, "Tell me the dreams," he starts off by saying, "The interpretations belong to God." We have an expression in a court of law that when you take an oath that you tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. He doesn't leave out the fact that the interpretations belong to God. And so he asks them to tell them his dreams. Well, if you look down in the verses, you'll find that they do. The chief butler tells him his dream in verse number 9 and 10, 11. Verse number 12, "And Joseph said unto him, this is the interpretation of it." And you look on and find out that he is going to be restored. We're not going to take the time to read the following verses, but the butler has a dream that basically is good news. In 3 days, you're going to go back to do the job that you had. But the baker, he doesn't tell his dream until he sees the interpretation is positive. The baker's hesitant. And so he says, "Well, the butler had good news. I think I'll tell him my dream." And so his dream is that he was carrying, you know, a basket of bread on his head. The birds come, they eat the bread. And Joseph says, "Well, the interpretation is that you're going to be hanged and the birds are going to come eat your flesh." Joseph got to be the bearer of good news and then bad news. But that didn't stop him from being faithful, did it? When Joseph speaks to the butler at the end of his dream, he pleads with him to remember him when he is restored. The butler forgets about Joseph. We sometimes become impatient when people are ungrateful. You ever done something for someone and they just simply don't say thank you? One of the things that I like to do when I travel is I have a Sunday school class of 7. They're all boys, ironically. But I like to take souvenirs or something from where I've traveled and take them back to my Sunday school class. Ironically, usually only one says thank you. And I noticed that. And if you knew the home situation of that particular boy, you would suspect he'd be the last one to be grateful. But the lack of gratitude in the others kind of rankles you a little bit until you just realize that's not your problem to do the right thing. Joseph delivers this interpretation, says, please remember me, and he doesn't. How in the world could you forget this little nugget of truth? The Bible talks about, the passage has gone from, it talks about things that will happen when perilous times will come. Natural affection is going to be gone. We see some of these things that occur, and we're like, how in the world could mothers do that to their children? Could fathers do it to their wives and to their kids? We don't understand it. But the butler is imprisoned because he made Pharaoh mad. He has a dream, can't figure out the interpretation of it at all. Joseph comes in, says, interpretations are of the Lord. You know what? You're going to get to go back to do what you've been trained and promoted to do. Your friend, the baker, says, I have a dream. Joseph says, you know what? You're going to be hanged, and the birds are going to eat your flesh. Both come to fruition, and somehow the butler forgets. That's amazing to me, but it just goes to show that sometimes a lack of gratitude can be extremely strong in people. Do you think Joseph allows that to make him bitter? No. Would it make me bitter? Likely. But not the case for him. All right, look at Genesis chapter 41, verse 41. Excuse me, chapter 41, verses 7 through 14. In the previous verses, you'll see that Pharaoh's had a dream. We're going to find out a little bit about that dream. Chapter 41, verses 7 through 14. And the seven thin ears devoured the seven rank and full ears. And Pharaoh awoke, and behold, it was a dream. He has a dream, all right? Well, he wants to find out what it means. And it came to pass in the morning that his spirit was troubled, and he sent and called for all the magicians of Egypt and all the wise men thereof. Does that particular verse sound remotely familiar? It reminds me in the book of Matthew when the wise men came, and they asked a question of Herod, and he was troubled in all Jerusalem with them. And they called the wise men and inquired diligently when the star appeared. All right, you'll see some small similarities in the story that are eerily familiar with Christ. That's because Joseph is a type of Christ. You'll see those things if you just pay attention as we go through. Well, then spake the, verse 8. And it came to pass in the morning that his spirit was troubled. He sent and called for all the magicians of Egypt and all the wise men thereof. And Pharaoh told them his dream, but there was none that could interpret them unto Pharaoh. There's a good reason. They were providentially hindered. Then spake the chief butler unto Pharaoh, saying, I do remember my faults this day. It's about time. But he did, ultimately. Verse number 10, Pharaoh was wroth with his servants and put me in ward in the captain of the guard's house, both me and the chief baker. We dreamed a dream in one night, I and he. We dreamed each man according to the interpretation of his dream. And there was with us a young man, an Hebrew, servant to the captain of the guard, and we told him, and he interpreted to us our dreams to each man according to his dream he did interpret. It came to pass as he interpreted to us, so it was. Me he restored into mine office, and him he hanged. Verse 14, then Pharaoh sent and called Joseph, and they brought him hastily out of the dungeon. He shaved himself and changed his raiment and came in unto Pharaoh. Pharaoh says, oh, so this guy was able to interpret your dream. He accurately did it. The butler is sticking his neck out for Joseph. All right? But they call for Joseph. They called him quickly. They gave him a shave. They gave him a change of raiment. They're going to bring him to Pharaoh to interpret the dream. Look at verse number 16. Verse 15, Pharaoh speaks to Joseph, says, I have this dream. And they say, you can interpret it. Verse 16. Joseph answered Pharaoh, saying, it is not in me. God shall give Pharaoh an answer of peace. This is likely the most influential, powerful person in the known world at the time, asking a favor of a Hebrew servant / slave who's been in prison and given this major platform Joseph's response is, I'm not the one who does this. It's God. He was what we call grounded. Sometimes we let things or situations get too big for us. That did not happen with Joseph. Look at verses 39 through 45. You can look at the verses in between. We won't take the time, but you can see the dream. Joseph interprets it. What's going to happen is there will be 7 years of plenty. The crops are going to boom, but there will be 7 years of famine that follow. Pharaoh is impressed by this. His first instinct is to say, who shall I put in charge of this? Well, here's the answer, verses 39 through 45. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, for as much as God hath showed thee all this, there is none so discreet and wise as thou art. How do you think the wise men felt about this? I think of Daniel and how he was brought in captivity and how he was constantly put in a position of authority. How that must have rankled the nerves of those who had been wise men for years and years. And Pharaoh, when he asked around, said, you know what? There's no one that has the same ability that you do. No one is discreet, no one is wise. Thou shalt be over my house, and according unto thy word shall all my people be ruled. I'm putting you in charge of all my people. That must have gone over very well. But they had no choice in the matter. Now pause with me for a moment and let's think about three people. How do you think the chief butler felt right now? Relieved that things went well for Joseph. Hopeful that Joseph doesn't remember how long he had to stay in there because he forgot. Wouldn't you try to buddy up to Joseph and say, hey, look, my memory got you out. Please forget the fact that you've been in there much longer than you should have been. What about the head of the prison? He treated Joseph extremely well, put him in charge over the whole prison. He would be sitting rather comfortably at this moment. But what about Potiphar and his wife? Hey, honey, you remember that Hebrew that I had put in prison that you said wanted to take advantage of you? Guess what? He interpreted Pharaoh's dream today, and he's now basically Pharaoh. He has, and you'll, if you read through the book of Genesis and find, for example, if you go all the way towards the end, when Jacob and Israel dies and they carry him back to Canaan, all the servants of Pharaoh go with Joseph to go bury him. He's all but Pharaoh. Potiphar is now in a sticky situation. If it were me, I would have made Potiphar's life miserable. I have kids, and there's an expression they're not allowed to say. I'm bored. You're not allowed to say it, because I will find something for you to do. We had a family that's fairly close to us, and the expression I'm bored was occurring often in their household. And they have, I think, somewhere around a 2-acre yard. And I said, that's easily fixed. Oh, how is it? I wanted to say it's not fidget spinners, it's not tablets, it's not video games, it's not TV. I said, give them a pair of scissors and tell them to cut the lawn. They said, you're kidding. I'm like, no. You get over boredom rather quickly. And he said, oh, that wouldn't go over well. I said, offer them nail clippers. Scissors will look pretty good. I said, after a few hours, just remind them, I'm bored doesn't exist. If it would have been me, Potiphar would have been out doing something with tweezers or something like that. Be honest, you don't have to raise your hand or nod. But if it were you, how long would it have taken for you to summon Potiphar and be like, hey, remember me? But you never hear anything of that. Sometimes the Bible is eloquent in its silence. The Bible tells us enough things, but there are some things that are left out. Joseph did not exact revenge on Potiphar. That's a pattern of behavior that will come into play later. All right, next passage. Verses 53 to 57. And the 7 years of plenteousness that was in the land of Egypt were ended, and the 7 years of dearth began to come, according as Joseph had said, and the dearth was in all lands, but in all the land of Egypt there was bread. Why? They took the precautions and didn't live high on the hog, if I can use that expression. I know that's a southern expression, but you understand what I mean. They had conserved, they had saved in the 7 years of plenty. Let's keep reading. When all the land of Egypt was famished, the people cried to Pharaoh for bread, and Pharaoh said unto all the Egyptians, go unto Joseph, what he saith to you, do. The famine was over all the face of the earth, and Joseph opened all the storehouses and sold unto the Egyptians, and the famine waxed sore in the land of Egypt. And all countries came into Egypt to Joseph for to buy corn, because that the famine was so sore in all the lands. God allowed Joseph to have the discernment and wisdom to know how to conserve during the 7 years of plenty. The word famine means a lack of food. Not all famines are the same. Sometimes growing up, I had the impression that famine meant there was absolutely no food at all. Some famines are stronger than others. This is what they call a sore famine. It was extreme. And we're going to see in a few chapters tomorrow and Friday that it got to the point that there was no growth, no food whatsoever. But Joseph's ability to think ahead ends up being the saving grace, not only for the nation of Egypt, but for his home people. If he had been so consumed by revenge, he would not have been able to see to the task that was given to him. All right, we will stop at that passage and we'll pick up tomorrow. His brothers are going to come down to Canaan. You know that. But we'll try to look at some new facts in regards to that